I'm Daljit Dhaliwal, and the breaking news that we have been reporting, the CDC has confirmed that the swine flu outbreak has claimed the first life in America, a 23-month-old child in Texas. We don't know yet if the baby was American, but it is the first death outside of Mexico where the outbreak first began. And out of the 65 confirmed cases of swine flu in the United States, most of them are, we should say, mild. The CDC has yet to release more details, but we go now to Dr. Susan Fisher-Hawk. She's in Texas, where she can actually see the border with Mexico, and she's an epidemiologist at the University of Texas School of Public Health and co-author of the book Level 4, Virus Hunters of the CDC. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Just want to get your reaction to this first casualty in the United States. Were you surprised to learn of this?
Well, it's clearly a personal tragedy for the family involved, but I was not surprised, no.
You're actually not that far in Texas. You knew that there were cases in your state. So can you tell us a little bit more about the Texas response to this disease and whether you feel that we need to kind of ratchet things up from a public health point of view now?
Well, the Texas response is very vigorous, particularly down here on the border where we're accustomed to living very close to Mexico, and we have quite a few suspect cases in our area. And I think everything that can be done is being done. There's availability of drugs, which we're going to need to treat the disease, and surveillance is being set up by the Texas Department of State Health Services. So it's a difficult situation. It's not the kind of epidemic we can stop just like that. But everything that can be done, I think, is being done.
Does this in any way change the kind of local response or the federal response, given that there has now been a death in the United States?
Well, it changes the public perception. It doesn't change any of the issues. We were going to have deaths, and it was just a question of when and who, because this is what influenza does. It kills people, and it often kills the very young and the very old. The big surprise with Mexico was that they are reporting deaths in otherwise healthy young adults. And this is what alerted everybody to this being different. And it's suggesting that this particular virus may be more pathogenic, more virulent than the usual flu strains. Sudden deaths in young people are characteristic of the big pandemics, and that's what was seen in 1918. This is what the fear is in the minds of those people who understand the influenza.
Dr. Hawk, quickly, because I know parents out there are very concerned for a 23-month-old. All right, this is a young child, 2 years old or less. Is it possible to use antiviral drugs with someone so young, or are those much too serious drugs for young people?
Now, I believe you can use them, but I'm not absolutely confident about the dose or the formulation. But the trick of treating is critical. It's the same thing as for all viral diseases. You have to treat them early. And if you don't treat within the first 24, 48 hours, the virus has done so much damage that the antiviral really isn't effective anymore. So, and that's one of the reasons why it hasn't been too effective in bird flu in Indonesia, because the patients have been so sick when they actually get to the hospital, it's usually too late to treat.
I didn't realize that. If you don't get the antiviral in the first 48 hours, forget about it.
It's not going to work very well, no.
There's been speculation that the virus actually originated in the United States and not Mexico. What are your thoughts on that? Is there any evidence to back up that case?
No, there's no evidence that I've seen. It's very, very unlikely, because wherever it originated is where you're going to see the first epidemic, because it spreads so easily. So the evidence right now points to the fact that it must have originated somewhere in Mexico. It's not anybody's fault, so pointing fingers is really not appropriate at all. It's just very bad luck for the Mexicans that whatever mutation occurred happened to occur there.
And what is it that we still need to try to figure out about this virus? What information do we still need to help us fight it and to better protect ourselves? Or is there enough information, do you feel, out there for us to take all of the kind of necessary precautions that we need to?
Well, now, right now, scientifically, what we need to do is to make some isolates and get them in the hands of some of our big flu labs. We have some excellent flu labs in the United States, and they'll work on deciding exactly how to construct a vaccine. We'll be able to get a vaccine for this strain, but unfortunately, it's going to take about 6 to 9 months before we've actually got it in our hands.
So, Dr. Hawk, I've got a very personal question here. I've got a 7-year-old at home this morning with a temperature of 101. What do I do?
You take care of them and you watch them. If they become severely ill, then you either call your doctor or maybe go to the hospital. But it's a very bad idea just to go to the doctors with a mild fever. This is a relatively mild fever, because that's the place to get infected, because everybody will go there with their infected kids and their infected older people. So one of the places that you're going to be able to catch this virus, if you haven't caught it already, is the doctor's office or the emergency room in the hospital.
Wow. Well, good advice. Thank you, Dr. Susan Fisher Hawk is an epidemiologist at the University of Texas School of Public Health. She's the co-author of the book Level 4, Virus Hunters of the CDC, and a former CDC staff member from 1986 to 1993. We should remind you, the CDC has just confirmed that the first life in the United States has been claimed by the swine flu, a 23-month-old child in Texas. And with more details now, Femi Okeh has our headlines.
Thank you very much, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.